I will start by thank you, the organizers, for putting together this amazing conference. I have so much fun here. It's, you know, not that ethical. And actually, I have to say also, I am really honored to speak in front of such audience, and especially about our preliminary results concerning detection of quantum phases and order parameters from projective measurements. So I'm lucky to be speaking after Una and Eliska, so you already know all about projective measurements, but just for the completeness, the main motivation is to take advantage of the unprecedented control that we have right now over quantum systems. We can engineer novel quantum matter with that, with novel exotic maybe phases. So we also like to develop methods for this unsupervised detection, not only of the phases themselves, which is very useful, but to understand the underlying physics, we also need to know the underlying order parameters that drives the transition. So that's the long-term goal. And this is the outline for my talk today. And I'm hoping to convince you in a process that we're making some steps towards this long-term goal. So I will start with state-of-the-art of order parameter detection, which is, to be honest, completely crazy that I'm speaking about it in this crowd because they're like Sebastian and Uda came in the audience. And so this is gonna be this introduction to the field. And then what's gonna be even more crazy, I will kind of maybe mention that there are some additional challenges that maybe weren't so far addressed. And that's how I will introduce the adaptive CNN that we're proposing. And finally, to maybe convey at least 1% of my enthusiasm for the method, I will show you the preliminary results, and maybe this will be enough for this 1%. Okay, so state of the art. So as I already hinted, our adaptive CNN is heavily inspired on the work of people in the audience, especially Interpretation Net by Sebastian. But also you will see elements of correlator CNN that Una Kim presented yesterday. And so it's only fair that I present first those two methods, then I will show you how our method compares to that. And when presenting this adaptive CNN, you will see elements of symbolic regression and prediction-based method by Eliska coming into the picture. So you will see all that. But let's start from Interpretation Net. So that was the first automated order detection, order parameter detection ever, 2017. It was a super neat idea and very intuitive. So basically, imagine you have your simple convolutional neural network, just single convolutional layer. Then you have global average pooling that takes every of your convolved images into a single value that then is being analyzed by your classification layers. That's like the simplest way to put it. And then imagine that that your input data are spin configurations. For example, 28 by 28 Monte Carlo samples. And now you can play with the size of the kernel. So imagine starting from 28 by 28 kernel. In this case, this is basically fully connected network that can pick up any possible correlators in your data. And then imagine decreasing the kernel size and tracking the what's your training loss, validation loss for every separate CNN with decreasing kernel. And the moment when you get smaller and smaller and smaller, you're blinding your CNN to multiple body correlators. So at some point, you see a dip in the accuracy where when you blinded your CNN too much and it's not possible for it to pick up correlators that are necessary to distinguish the phases. So in this case, for example, 2 by 1 correlator was kernel correlator was needed to distinguish the phase in a perfect way. But that's not all. You can also take advantage of the fact that your spin configurations are +1, -1, and you can use a Taylor expansion to understand that actually your 1 by 1 kernel is exactly a function of magnetization, because you'd also take advantage of the fact that here you have this averaging layer that is basically averaging over your spin system. And then 1/2 kernel is actually your like spin-spin interaction term and all that. Important thing here is the assumption that if your network wasn't able to pick up full accuracy at 1/1, the dominant correlator in that 2/1 is this spin-spin correlation, so higher order correlator. So now I will be blunt to mention that like maybe limitations of this approach, which is it requires multiple training runs. And it's not obvious to me how to expand it to multi-class problems. For example, when you have one phase driven by a single body correlator and the other by two body correlator, how to really play with that. And plus there is also the thing that what's going on when you input multiple bases of measurements. So some of those problems were addressed by correlator CNN, by Cole Miles, Annabelle Bord, and Una Kim. She already also mentioned that, but just for the to be complete, at this point you have measurements done in different bases. You have a single kernel that creates your convolved images, and then your correlator CNN takes this convolved image and creates its higher order representations. So you can intuitively you can think of it that those are like responsible for picking up one body correlators, two body correlators, and n body correlators. Then you collapse every convolved image into, again, single value, and then it goes to this classification layer, which they call back portion. So again, you see the similar ideas behind the setup. So you already see that you can try to make it interpretable by looking at the correlators. How to make it even more interpretable? You retrain your back portion, you fix all this first correlator extraction part, and you just retrain this back portion by penalizing more and more and more usage of various kernels, and you check when your accuracy just gets destroyed. So you basically try to penalize usage of multiple correlators until, for example, just one four-order correlator survives. And this is how you interpret that this was the dominant correlator in your data. And finally, to have some more thorough understanding of what's going on, you need to visually inspect the filters. And I will be bold here to mention that this is the tricky part. Because for every interpretation method, when you need to visually inspect something, your human biases can enter. I'm not saying, of course, that there were any human biases in the previous works. I'm just saying it's prone to those biases. Also, of course, there is this, it requires retraining of the back portion. And finally, so the work that Una showed yesterday, they combine it with unsupervised learning by putting PCA, but it's not one tool. So it's the network is not explaining why it detected those different clusters. It just makes a It extracts correlators out of clustered data. Okay, so those are the challenges. So one thing is we would like to detect all those correlators involving multiple sites, different geometries, without visual inspection of filters. We would like to be able to do that when we have multiple phases in the data set, when our measurements are done in various bases, and we would like to put it together in one tool with unsupervised approach. So I'm not saying we did all of that. However, I'm hoping that when we get to the finish line, all of that will be addressed. So let me now explain how the adaptive CNN works. So my original name for that was Tetris, and I guess you will see in a second why, but it's protected trademark, apparently. So unfortunately, this is gone. But the main idea is let's just take a CNN and let's have lots of parallel branches of it, and every branch has its own kernel with its own shape, with its own size, with its own corresponding correlator. And let's train it in such a way that we are promoting usage of simple kernels and usage of as small number of kernels as possible. when we promote this sparsity, we end up, for example, with a few filters or a few kernels that are activated at different phases. And you can, with Sebastian's approach, you can map it back to the correlators that they encode. So that's the main idea, basically. Let's do that all in one whole great training. I thought it would explode, but apparently we can have like, you know, 50, 100 branches, and it just optimizes because machine learning is crazy. So how does it look in more detail? So we have similarly as with correlator and interpretation neural network, we have those two parts. We have the part that extracts correlations and part that is just responsible for classification or regression, whatever you want. So as this first part is much more interesting, let's cut this one for a moment and let's focus what's going on here. So the input here is also, of course, projective measurements, so spin configurations. We have multiple branches that are being trained at the same time. Each branch gets its own kernel size and shape. As you see, we can have multiple extra convolutions if we need. The only thing we need to take care of is that every next convolution will have kernel one by one at most, because at this point it cannot pick up any higher order correlators than the convolution in the first place. Then we again average over the system to emulate the behavior of local order parameters. And what we end up with is from every branch, we just get one number that we call activation. Activation of every branch. And each of them can be thought of as how important the branch was when making this analysis. Okay, so also you can think of this part as a bottleneck, because remember, you inputted kind of large data, you put that all from the network, and you end up with a one-dimensional vector. Each branch gives you just one value. Okay, so those activations will be what enters to this final classification or regression network, and then it's normal. Boring stuff, so there's nothing much to tell here, apart from the fact that the training is now important, because what you need to penalize, so normal L2 regularization as always. Also, you need to put L1 penalty on the activations of this bottleneck, meaning I want to have as many zeros here as possible, use as little kernels as possible. And finally, we want to have penalty on using kernels of increasing sizes. So every branch will have larger penalty if the corresponding kernel is larger or more complex or more crazy in shape. So that's the rough idea. And already this activation in the bottleneck tells you which correlators are being picked up. And most importantly, because we're promoting the simple ones, when they are not picked up in the highest, then we know that the more complex kernels have this dominant term coming from the highest possible, order correlators. But if you want to be more thorough, you can add symbolic regression onto the mix. So, and then what you can do is you can really connect the detected correlators computed for input data. So, for example, if it's 2x2 and none of the simpler correlators was picked up, it means it was a function of those four spins average over the system. And then you have few combinations of them possible, like 4, 5, whatever. And then you compute them for the input data, and you really can map what the bottleneck tells you. So what is really the function that it encodes. And then if you want, you can also do that for the bottleneck, between the bottleneck and the output as well. And you will see why it can be interesting in the preliminary results, why this additional analysis can be interesting. Okay, so that was the architecture. I just realized that I kind of assumed that everyone know how convolutional neural network works, but I'm hoping it's not too crazy of an assumption. If you have any questions, please interrupt. And if not, then I will show you some preliminary results. And of course, what the first thing you do when you have a new ML method, Ising model. So, but we went crazy, and it's transverse field Ising. So we have this, we have two phases, depending on the interplay between the transverse field and interaction between neighboring spins. And so physics is, kind of trivial and known, so let's just focus how our tool enters the picture at this moment. So I will show you two setups. One setup is supervised classification, just so we can walk slowly through the how to analyze the network when it's learned. And then I will show you how to combine it in unsupervised analysis using regression in the way that Eliska actually proposed. So, okay, let's start with supervised classification. So boring stuff on transverse field Ising, which is also not the most exciting quantum model in existence, but it's still cool. Okay, so what you need to follow when analyzing your network? You need to check what are the values of your bottleneck, what are activations of your bottleneck during the training. So as I told you, we have L1 penalty. Oh, sorry, yes? Sure. So we simulated the snapshots, meaning those are spin configurations coming from different phases in the Ising. So you have ordered phase you have ferromagnetic phase where all spins are in the Z basis. So in this case we have Z basis, which is super trivial. You can with your own eyes detect phases. Then we'll go crazy and show why measurements. Okay. So here. You track basically the activations, and you see that the only non-zero activation that plays a role is coming from kernel 1x1, which we know is related to magnetization. What is exact function of magnetization we need to yet to check. So this is the next step that you can do, which is now we know it's about magnetization. You compute magnetization for various data, and you fit it, and this is your X, and your Y are activation in the bottleneck, and you fit it, and it's like basically boring. If you care about this -2.75, you got it. But it's basically a simple function of magnetization. But now, what can be curious, and you will see in a second, when we try to fit this second part of the network, which is what it does with this correlator when it's being picked up, what is going on at the output. So it's never exactly magnetization. There is some sigmoid shape that we cannot fit because we didn't try hard enough, but usually it's some kind of higher order of this magnetization. And why is it important? Because when you, those are activations of the, activations of the network of this bottleneck for the snapshots of increasing sizes. And you see that this behaves exactly as magnetization. So the transition moves along with G, but when you look at the probabilities, they actually have and plot them for the system of increasing sizes, the same trained network for analyzing data for different sizes. You see that they actually, it's more about the cumulant. So the second part of the network, when it gets in the magnetization, learns some higher order that then allows you to just find how where they intersect, and this is the transition in the high n limit. So you see that sometimes it's the last part of the network does something additional. It's not new. It was already visible in Juan papers in 2017. But I just wanted to say that.
Using a different quantity like a spin cumulant, say.
I'll ask again. Even knowing the order parameter, it's sometimes difficult to detect transitions, and it can be really useful knowing what is the best quantity to detect phase transitions, like typically we take the Bindercumulant for that. Has your neural network found the Bindercumulant in the end?
No, it's not exactly Bindercumulant.
It's also higher order.
It's some higher order, and unfortunately, that's why it's preliminary. So as you see, we're trying fits to really see what it is doing with this magnetization. And you see those terrible points here, right? So we didn't fit it yet. But this should tell you what is, at least according to the network, useful higher moment of the magnetization to then do this, right? But it's not binder because we were expecting binder and allowed for those functions to be picked up and it didn't. So something else, but sorry, I don't know what. Okay, so but that concludes the analysis. This is a trivial example, but it shows you how you should analyze the network. So now, as I promised, we go crazy. We go for data in wide bases, which is, so at least this is an example where you look at those snapshots with your own eyes and you don't see immediately what's going on. And then you see that it's nicely picked up kernel 2x1, and you do the same analysis. It's exactly this correlator. And we did a bit better in fitting it, but it's exactly just the, No. There, I didn't show the last slide. So yes, so it was the two-body correlator. So now I told you that we can have this multiple measurement basis, right? It does complexify the analysis a little bit, because now you have to have more options in your symbolic regression fit, but you still see that when one by one kernel being picked up, those are the terms that you need to take into account, and then you do a fit, and it turned out when it had all the data, it actually learned magnetization in the X basis. Okay, so that was supervised classification, and then we were curious that if we change the task to regression, and as Eliska showed, when you do the regression on the same data set, and now the task is to predict the G, that the transverse field strength that was for which the data was generated, the moment when the network is wrong, kind of, I simplify, shows the moment where the phase transition is. So so we did the regression. Actually, I was surprised by result because there is nothing I thought now that convinces the network to use discrete, the kind of the jumpy correlators. I would expect that it learns something else, but no, it picks up the same correlators as in a classification case. And we wanted to do this derivative, but on the magnetization. But as I just told you guys, this is like the derivative of the output is more reliable because at the end it learns some kind of higher order of magnetization, not the magnetization itself. So the this prediction-based method gives you the transition better because it's more related to the true transition point. Okay, and I think I'm really behind time, but I will show you one more crazy thing, which was we asked Antoine, our expert in physics in the team, like about some complex model, and we made this kind of exercise. Me and my student didn't know anything about the model. I wanted the network to teach us what are correlators that are relevant there. So we tackled the one-dimensional bilinear biquadratic spin one Heisenberg model. Now we have to modify the Taylor expansion because we have spin one, so we have zeros, so we have additional quadratic terms entering the picture, but it's all simple to include. And there are some phases. And it's extremely preliminary because we know that our demergy sucks there, and we have some artifacts that we don't know where it come from, so I will just really go quickly through the slide so you don't look too closely about those artifacts. And also we see that we could penalize CNN more. Okay, but this is the result. So this is how you would analyze it. So it's, again, regression. We want to predict this theta. Network predicts the thetas. And this is the derivative. This is prediction-based method by Eliska. So that we see some transitions. but the one around Haldane is completely not detected, and I will explain in a moment why. And those are related correlators that survived a non-zero. Interestingly, there is one with dilation picked up. This is one with an empty spot in between. And those are dominant correlators in both cases. And we were super happy because this is what theory told us. I mean, of course, you don't have to believe me that this was the order it happened, but it was. But I think important thing is also we did not detect any string order parameter that is visible in a Haldane model. And the reason is we forced network to speak in our language of local correlators. So it wasn't even able to pick up this additional string order. So the thing that we can do is now try to design special kernels that would pick up those string order. It's not actually difficult to design such kernels. However, you see the game. You have to kind of expect the family of order parameters that you'd like to see to really make a search over it. But then, of course, I just show you the 1D examples. It's readily applicable to 2D, besides the fact that we now need to worry about symmetric and non-symmetric kernels. In other words, rotational invariant and not rotational invariant kernels. I think it's like Ising gauge theory ready, in a sense. It should pick up the plaquette. Again, we know the order parameter, but it's kind of a test whether it's able to do. And then when it comes to unsupervised learning, we could, I think, also readily incorporate it with Siamese neural networks and do some more crazy stuff like really learn the optimal correlator, the shape of the optimal correlator with backpropagation. Okay, so take-home message is, if you want your network to be interpretable, force it to speak your language, for example, language of correlators, of local order parameters. Beware, it does limit expressivity. So suddenly, when your large networks were able to pick up topological phase, now maybe it won't be because you forced it to look at local order parameters. So, yeah, okay, so definitely I want to say that the work was done by amazing bachelor student, Kacper Cybiński, and James is a PhD of computer science. He helped us to set up the training first. And Antoine, of course, our expert, our physics expert in the team. And oh yeah, I wanted to flash some other problems I'm working on, but I'm super, super late. But I'm really curious about both fundamentals and ML for quantum. So I'd love to talk about that with you guys. And for that, thank you so much for attention. Sorry for me.
Thanks, Anna. You have questions?
Thanks, Anna. That was really cool. I mean, you honored me way too much, so you deserve much more of that honor than what you gave me. So I was wondering about, we have already been discussing about different signatures for the same phase transition. And so since you have multiple branches of your neural network right at the input, might it be that several of these, that one branch picks up one signature, like the magnetization, the second picks up the energy and system mm-hmm. abilities and so on?
Yes, however, by design, I will zero out everything else that is larger in size than magnetization. So at least at the level of this activations. So I wanted to learn the simplest possible correlator, and the rest should die down. But I think that still this possibility that it's like susceptibility or those higher order, this can happen on this, you know, on this nonlinear part. But we're like just really having so much hard time to fit it and find it with symbolic regression that at this point I don't know what to say about that.
Thanks.
But yeah.
Yeah, let me follow up on my question I had before. So did you try, were you able to make a quantitative statement a bit whether it works better to extract a critical point than using the Binder cumulant, what you're doing?
I think, okay, my intuition would be no, probably. So I think that in every case where physics knows the correct order parameter, we're only trying to compare against it. But if you're, so for example, I didn't know that finding a correct cumulant is an issue. So this is how much I know about physics. So I don't think anyone looked closer. So I think we all got stuck at this level of correlators. And I would definitely, as you said, I would definitely look closer at this final part then and what it really learns and what kind of higher orders and, yeah.
I would have guessed that your network should be able to find the Binder cumulant.
Right? Yeah, I think so. But I think this also may kind of answer your question. So the intercept at 0.49, we know, and the theory says it's 0.5, and Binder cumulant probably would say 0.5. So in that sense, I think this beats the NN. Yeah. On the other hand, we never told the network anything about the transition point. So it also wasn't that.
Okay.
It did a good job. So there's Skylar.
You mentioned that any, issues with the DMRG data impacted how this method worked using that.
Oh, no, sorry. Thank you for this. No, what I meant is I just feel embarrassed, but that there are those peaks. But the thing is, model exactly found the correlators present in the data, even if there were artifacts coming from DMRG, not from physics of the system. So that's why I'm not so embarrassed to show it, because it still shows that the CNN works. It just tells you that we did something bad in the meantime.
So I don't know the nature of the issues with the DMRG data, but how do you expect this to work then for experimental data where you have some sources of error specific to the device?
I think it's pretty well, I think people agree on that thanks to the stochasticity of the training of CNNs, of neural networks, we are doing pretty good when it comes to random noise, so I wouldn't worry about that. When it comes to systematic noise, I think it will be picked up. So for example, it will be shown there is additional correlator, but which is not actually a true correlator it is true, it's in the data, but it doesn't have to be, it's for sure not systematic noise resident.
Okay, I think, one more
question. For each of these kernel sizes, do you have multiple filters or do you only have one filter for each kernel size?
Thanks. To increase expressivity, we have multiple filters per. So in those cases, we had three filters per choice of the size. And that's why in the end you see that more than one kernel of one size survived. But in the end, I think if we penalize it more, that's exactly my intuition, that one of them will die out. But it's actually helping optimization when you put even more parameters to the mix.
And also you mentioned that you are looking at local correlators. Is that because you basically limit your kernel size and you're not looking at higher order kernels?
So by local, I mean, if we had 5 by the order parameter involving 5 spins, but next to each other, I still would call it local. I think that the moment when you speak about non-local order parameters is when you have those non-trivial, for example, spin order. And in that case, what happens, you have some correlator that I would call local, but then you have to take into account what happened in between those spins. And then it's much less trivial and you cannot just do multiplication of your spins. And then but it's my very naive understanding of local order parameters.
Thank you.
I think we will move on to the next speaker. So let's thank Anna again.